yesterday from our discussions, many relevant points came up about relationship. One of the first things that we understood that the relationships that we are hankering for are actually loving relationships. The relationships that will enable us to have a loving exchange. Those relationships are positive relationships or favorable relationships. And why do we need this relationship is mainly because of love. And then it came up that why do we love? Why do we want to love somebody? Why do we need to be loved by somebody? Because from this loving exchange, we get happiness. We want to derive happiness or joy from these loving exchanges. And then one very interesting point came up that in the material nature, most of these loving exchanges do not really give us the ultimate, or doesn't fulfill the ultimate expectation that we want from love. The expectations of love often remains unfulfilled in the material platform. Why? Because those loving relationships are based on bodily relationships. And no matter how deep, how earnest that loving relationship is, still, because the body is temporary, that loving relationships also are temporary. At some point, we become separated. And that is the love on the material platform. But then some points came up that there are two kinds of loving relationships: material love and spiritual love. And the spiritual love is the loving relationships that are centered around Krishna, or the relationship that is with Krishna. Love, when offered to Krishna, then the love becomes fulfilled. That relationship achieves the ultimate success of love. And what we want to derive out of love becomes completely fulfilled, and as a result of that, our hearts become perfectly satisfied. And since Krishna is the source of everybody, since everyone is parts and parcels of Krishna, therefore when we develop a loving relationship with Krishna, then there is also loving exchange with his parts and parcels. When we love Krishna, we also love Krishna's parts and parcels. So it is not that when we love Krishna, we hate everybody else. Rather, when we love Krishna, then we also learn to love everybody. But that love is different from what we consider to be love in the material plane. And then we came to a point that there is a difference between love and lust. What goes on in the name of love in the material nature is actually lust. But the actual love is when it is offered to Krishna. Love is exclusively reserved for Krishna. And in that respect, we considered a quotation from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, that the desire to fulfill our own senses, desire to gratify our own senses, is called lust. And the desire to give pleasure to Krishna's senses is called love. Therefore, there is a big difference between love and lust. And Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami goes on to explain that love is brilliant as the sun, whereas lust is the deepest darkness. Prem Atoev kam preme bohuto antar kam andho tamo prem nirmal bhaskar. Kam is lust, is andho tamo, the deepest darkness. The darkest region is the lust. Whereas prem is nirmal bhaskar. Nirmal means spotless. Bhaskar means sun. Prem, love, is like spotless, brilliant sun, and lust is the deepest darkness. So what goes on in the name of love, generally in the material platform, is actually lust. It is not love. So in this way, we consider the difference between material love and spiritual love. And when that love is offered towards Krishna, then that love that is offered to Krishna is reflected onto different parts and parcels of Krishna in different ways. To Krishna's devotees, it's reflected in the form of friendship. To the innocent, it is reflected in the form of compassion. And to the offenders, it's reflected in the form of disregard. And so in this way, we analyzed different relationships, and the objectives of relationship, and the ultimate perfection of relationship. Is it all right? Did I summarize it all right? Yesterday's class? Yesterday, not class. Yesterday we had a very nice session. Did you like that session? We had different people, different devotees speak. I asked them to speak on different aspects, and they brilliantly described and analyzed and defined those points. And that's how we came to this understanding. Okay, so today we are going to how to make it happen in our own day-to-day life. How we are going to react. Just intellectualizing is not going to serve the purpose. This intellectualizing is just a matter of this part of the body, head. But what really matters with us is this part of the body, the heart. We love with all our hearts. We don't love with all our heads. Love is a phenomenon of the heart. And so actually we all, one thing we came to understand, that we all need love. And through that love we want to get the joy. Everyone's heart is hankering for this joy. We all want joy. And in order to experience that joy, we need love. And in order to develop our loving relationship, we need relationship. So without developing relationship, we cannot really survive. The more, the merrier. The more is the sphere of our exchange. The more is the sphere of relationship, greater is the extent of joy. In this respect, Prabhupada made another point very, very beautifully. Prabhupada defined the difference between peace and joy. Often people say, shanti, shanti, we want shanti, we want peace. But Prabhupada pointed out, no, we don't want peace. We want joy. Like we may live in a palace, in a very beautiful atmosphere, all by ourselves, just alone by myself, not by ourselves, by myself. I'll be very peaceful there. Or I may be very peaceful there. But when we want to enjoy, then what do? I call all my friends and throw a party. I mean, Krishna conscious party. We have a Harinam Sankirtan. So this is the difference. Alone we can be peaceful, but if we want to enjoy, then we want others. Because through this exchange, we derive joy. By myself, by oneself, one cannot experience joy. Jai Shri Shri Radha Golokananda. Isn't it quite interesting that Radha Golokananda ki jai, and we want joy. Everybody wants joy. So how to get the joy? By developing our relationship with Golokananda. So peace is the neutral point. When there is no suffering, that is peace. Like you consider the graph. The axis, on the left hand side of the axis is negative kingdom, and on the right hand side of the graph is the positive. And in the middle is the axis. The axis is zero. You go into the left hand side, each unit is -1, -2 and so forth, right? And you go to the right hand side, it is +1, +2, and so forth. So this is the difference. Like in the material nature, we are in a miserable suffering condition. But when the suffering condition comes to a cessation, when the suffering stops, then that is the state of peace. The zero. No suffering. But then you go to the other side of it. Then state of joy. This world is that world is full of joy. And that joy is experienced out of our loving exchange with Krishna and with our exchange with others, Krishna in the center. Now, a few questions actually came up, like some devotees came to me today and told me about, asked me about certain questions about relationship. So I said, okay, I will not answer your questions now. I won't answer your questions now, but I'll do it in the evening so that everybody can hear. So I'll just start off with some questions that are here, and then I'll go to the other questions. And if you all have any questions, either you can verbally ask me or you can write it down in a piece of paper. I was told that many devotees are shy to ask questions. They have questions, but they feel shy to ask in front of everybody. So those who are feeling shy, or those who feel it's convenient, you can write down your questions. So I will get into questions, answers now. So the first question I'll answer is, devotees' lives have become very busy. They have many family responsibilities, etc. The temple is no longer the center of their activities. How can we come closer as a spiritual family and work unitedly to push on the movement? Very nice question. It's a very practical question. We are facing this problem everywhere. Devotees, when they are brahmacharis or brahmacharinis, they are fully engaged in Krishna consciousness. But then change their ashram. From brahmachari ashram they go into the household life. And as householders, often I'm just talking about the temple devotees, like as householders, initially they continue in the temple, but then as the responsibilities begin to grow and the demands keep on increasing, then they see that temple cannot actually maintain them, fulfill their requirements, then they have to go out and look for a job, take up a job. Then they don't have any time for the temple, and gradually it seems that they have drifted away and our relationships become weak. So what to do about that? Like, that is the question. How can we come closer as a spiritual family and move unitedly and work unitedly to push on the movement? Yeah, so as you mentioned mentioned family. When you speak of a family, then we have to recognize the center of the family. The head of the family. Who is the center of the family, and with him we become related to the other members of the family. Like, for example, in a family the father is the center, and with the father in the center we become related to each other as brothers and sisters, and then our children become related as cousins and uncles, aunts. So similarly, in order to maintain this family feeling, we have to find the common center. At least in the temple, we have Krishna in the center. We have to, no matter how busy we are, we have to recognize that Krishna is the center of our family. And if we go if we come closer, then we can also see that Prabhupada is the center of our family. Anyway, I will not go into that now, but I'll just stick to that Krishna is the center of the family, which nobody can deny. So here we are living in a community of devotees. We are in a family, Krishna conscious spiritual family. And you have to recognize that Krishna is the center of the family. And we have to act accordingly. Like, we have to recognize that whatever we are doing, ideally, we should be doing that for Krishna. We have to make Krishna as the center. If we want to become Krishna conscious, then we have to do. Our business is to become Krishna conscious. And if we put Krishna in the center, it's not that we have to do everything for Krishna. It may not be possible in our household life, but at least we should have a considerable amount of attachment to Krishna. Not that because I have become a householder now, my
to Krishna has been given up and all my attachment is free. If that is the case, then we have to be careful that that is the position of Krishna. To shift our attention from Krishna to someone else. On the other hand, if we can see other relationships
in the light of Krishna, in relation to Krishna, then it is going to enhance our Krishna consciousness. Not just me and Krishna. Me, others, and others through Krishna. That is the more advanced stage of spiritual consciousness, which I discussed briefly yesterday, that a neophyte devotee thinks that he is a devotee and Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. That's all.
Krishna is God. And
but who is Madhyam Adhikari, the second class devotee? Recognizes that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, therefore he develops his love for Krishna. He recognizes those who are in love with Krishna also, therefore he develops friendship with them. He recognizes those who are innocent about Krishna, ignorant about Krishna. He goes and gives them Krishna consciousness, and those who are offensive to Krishna, he just avoids them. So that is the second class devotee, the more advanced stage, is when we see everybody in the light of Krishna. And so here we have to consciously cultivate this necessity. Not that because I have family responsibilities, because I have job, because I have to earn money, I cannot maintain my Krishna consciousness. That will be a failure. So we have to maintain our Krishna consciousness in spite of all our responsibilities. And so many wonderful examples are there. For example, Arjuna is fighting a battle. He is in the battlefield fighting a war. It's a question of life and death. One mistake and he can be dead. But even at that stage, he is maintaining his Krishna consciousness. If Arjuna can maintain his Krishna consciousness at that situation, then what to speak of us? Why can't we maintain our Krishna consciousness? Rather, more difficult the situation, the more Krishna conscious we should become. And now this is one side of this problem. I was trying to find a more suitable expression than problem. But anyway, I hope you understand what I mean. But the other side of it is, when you see that somebody is drifting away because of various reasons from Krishna consciousness, then go and try to remind him that he must maintain his Krishna consciousness. Not just, oh, he is going away, drifting away, let him. That shouldn't be our attitude. If your brother or sister is making a mistake, will you allow them to continue doing that? You will try to stop them. Go and tell them. Similarly, we are actually dealing with our brothers and sisters in our community. So when somebody is facing some problem, facing some difficulty, help him, help her. Okay, I'll go to the next one. at different times devotees find themselves feeling isolated and not knowing where to connect. How can we reach out to give each other support and spiritual strength and create activities that meet the needs of the devotees? Very good point. So actually this question is leading to the next point. Like when that situation like that arises, what should we do? At different times, devotees find themselves feeling isolated and not knowing where to go and where to connect. They kind of get drifted away. And just consider, so many devotees have drifted away. It's a fortunate soul. Out of millions and millions of individuals, one becomes a devotee of Krishna. Now, after getting this very, very rare opportunity, when one accepts Krishna consciousness and maintains, practices the process, then why should we allow them to go away? Okay, due to force of circumstances, they have been in a difficult situation. Now, what are we going to do about that? The first thing I will suggest that the sincere, concerned and involved devotees should get together and make a plan how we are going to bring them back, how we are going to help them. That is what I will suggest. Make a program. Okay, they are kind of very, very busy. Make some program. Like request them, just as I am seeing Kardama Muni Prabhu. He's coming and although he's very busy, he's worshipping the deities in the temple. And this engagement will keep them enthused. So we should create opportunities like that for the devotees. We can also have some get-together like on Saturdays. Like the other day we had a kirtan in the evening and so many of you came. And if we continue to have such programs and inspire the devotees, then I'm sure they will feel encouraged, they will feel enlivened. And you can also form a committee, a counseling, will counsel and advise and help. And our mood should be, how can we bring those devotees back? Like yesterday during the discussion, one point came up very distinctly, very clearly, that at the end of Bhagavad Gita, what Krishna is saying, that those who distribute this message to the people around and bring them close to me, they are the dearest ones. They are most intimately connected to me. No one is more dear than them. So this is how happy Krishna becomes when we bring the living entities back to Him. Now what to speak of those who came to Krishna and drifted away? The possibility of their coming back to Krishna is so much greater. And the effort can be so much easier to do that. When Satsarupa Maharaj was in Boston, was the temple president of Boston, he was going out to make programs in the universities, and Prabhupada wrote to him, "No, you emphasize, you put your effort to cultivate the devotees and train the devotees, those who are already in the temple. Not that those who have come close, now we neglect them and go out. What's the point in going out and making new devotees when we are not taking care of our old devotees at home?" So we have to recognize that our first and foremost consideration, first and foremost responsibility is to take care of the devotees, those who are already there. We have to take care of them. And we must maintain their Krishna, help them to maintain their Krishna consciousness to the best of our ability. So, in this respect, I will request the senior devotees to create a kind of a committee or a body to work on this. May I request Mother Krishna Priya and Mother Golokananda Priya to take care of that? And Dayavir Prabhu also. Please get together and all, also Lochan Prabhu, Bhattu Gopal Prabhu, the senior devotees, please get together and do something about it. Make a point that, make a plan, make a strategy. How to continue the involvement of the devotees who are already there? How can we facilitate them to maintain their Krishna, to execute their devotional service? The next question is, devotees sometimes feel hurt over past incidents and they begin to not have trust. They lose. Often our relationship in the past had been, I'm talking about early days in late 70s, early 80s. And we have come a long way. Today the atmosphere in ISKCON is quite tolerant, quite understanding and quite welcoming in that sense. Like in, it's all right, don't worry, Chandrasekhar. Just sit down and don't worry about it. Don't worry. Like, because, you see, it kind of breaks the chain of thoughts. So, I mean, there has been time. Many, many devotees have been driven out of the movement because they could not line up with the leadership. They could not treat the leaders as good as Srila Prabhupada. It was demanded out of them. Today the situation is much better and I feel happy about that. That's a good sign. And in a way, often I'm just being very frank about these discussions. Like, there were about 10,000 devotees. Prabhupada had about 10,000 disciples. Where are those devotees? How many Prabhupada disciples are there in ISKCON today? Isn't it painful? How will Prabhupada feel? I have seen myself. Prabhupada would come to Mayapur and Prabhupada would ask, where is he, where is this person, where is that person? And when Prabhupada was told that they left, And Prabhupada, once I heard Prabhupada saying that I am bringing them and you are driving them out. So we have to recognize that these devotees are coming here for the sake of Srila Prabhupada. They're Prabhupada's property. They're Prabhupada's assets. And our duty, our solemn responsibility is to take care of them, maintain them on behalf of Srila Prabhupada. So, yes, devotees sometimes also, for various reasons, devotees go away. It's also understandable. But the leaders have to seriously consider why these devotees are going away and how can I keep them. Leader means one who has the responsibility. How can we keep them? It is they have to figure out. And that's what Prabhupada is expecting out of the leaders of this movement. How to bring devotees and how to keep them secured in the movement and prepare them for the spiritual sky. So, in short, I'll simply say that we have to keep our doors wide open and we have to go out and try to bring them back. Not consider that, oh, he has left, he has gone away, so he has blooped, he's hopeless. We don't have anything to do with it. Let's not become so insensitive and heartless. Let us rather become broad-minded, warm, kind-hearted, and have compassion for them, bring them back. Let us seriously consider how can we not only keep everyone here, but those who have gone out, bring them also back to Krishna consciousness. And yes, they will not have trust, they will have doubts, but with our kindness, with our genuine and earnest feelings and display of compassion and love, we can win their confidence over again. And that is how we can create a society based on love and trust. And love and trust are reciprocal. You love and they will trust you. It's natural. Guru Gauranga, you have a question or comment?
Yes, I have a question. It's not exactly on the same topic, but I was thinking, you know, a lot of the relationships start in the family situation. And we see that the relationships in the family sometimes break down among the devotees. There's a lot of divorce, etc. And my question is, in this philosophy, we're trained to put Krishna in the center, and the living entities are all property, they're all enjoyed by Krishna, and they're pretending to be Purushas. Even the ladies are trying to be the Purusha of their households, and the men are trying to be the Purusha. So how do you reconcile what is the dynamic of the relationship between the husband and wife when both of them know that Krishna is the beloved? How does this, how does this become a healthy relationship? As far as the wife, is she supposed to be in the illusion that my husband's my dharmapati and he's my beloved and, I go to Krishna through him, or is she supposed to see the guru? What is the dynamic of these relationships in regard to the philosophy?
It's quite nice that you brought up, because there was a question also came up today. Like the question was, what is the dharma of a woman? What is the dharma of a man? And if one does not follow his dharma, does it give the other to the right to also give up his dharma? You see, and there are two considerations. There are two considerations only. Krishna or me. Our consciousness can work only on these two aspects. Either the consciousness is projected towards Krishna, or the consciousness is projected through my senses, which is actually me consciousness. Right? Me and mine. And that concept of me and mine is the Maya. So this, when I put me and me in the center, like, then what happens? We begin to see things in that light. Say, my home, my family, my relatives, my property, and so this, you know, centers around me and then extends into mine. And that is actually the illusory energy of the Lord. I mean, when you do that, we become entrapped by the illusory energy of the Lord. And that will lead to endless sufferings, and which is the cycle of birth and death. Most of the people in the material nature, practically all the living entities in the material nature, are in that condition. Their consciousness is projected away from Krishna, therefore it is being projected through their body, through their senses, and into the world of senses, world of sense perception. Now, as I'm sure everybody knows by reading Srila Prabhupada's books, that is the cause of our suffering condition. The other consideration is to project the consciousness onto Krishna. Now, when you project the consciousness onto Krishna, as I said, like, it's a ray of consciousness, right? So this ray of consciousness is projected onto Krishna, and through Krishna it is being projected or reflected onto others. So this, it is not direct me and you. It is me and Krishna, you. So in this way, all the relationships are centered around Krishna, or based upon Krishna. Say, in that situation, what will happen? The husband will not see his wife as his wife. It is Krishna to her. He will see that how she is a part and parcel of Krishna. Therefore, she has to become engaged in the service of Krishna. So as a husband, he guides her and facilitates her in the service of Krishna. He sees his son and daughters in the same light, parts and parcels of Krishna. Krishna's parts and parcels. How they can be engaged in Krishna's service. Because the ultimate goal of life is to become engaged in serving Krishna. So in this way, like whoever we come across, because we are seeing him in the light of Krishna consciousness, it gets a spiritual dimension. And not only the living entities, but even inert objects are also seen in that light. That these, say for example, my house is not my house, it's Krishna's house. My possessions are not my possessions, they're Krishna's assets. I am simply a caretaker. And that is the very sum and substance of Vedic understanding. Therefore in the Vedic society, even the kings never considered that their kingdoms were their property. The kings used to consider that their kingdom actually belongs to Krishna. He is only a caretaker. He used to protect Krishna's kingdom. He used to take care of Krishna's citizens, Krishna's children. And and facilitate everybody to become Krishna conscious. And in order to do that, he was prepared even to give up his life. So that is the ideal situation.
So in the neophyte stage, one has to see Krishna as, you know, we're the servant of Krishna. And then, but since the living entity is hankering for this ananda, this love, so, and wants to fulfill that, and the, you know, not wanting to become a sahajya, he gets into illusion and, you know, takes a wife, or vice versa, takes a husband. So then, the mentality that you're saying is that we have to project our consciousness, that we have to give that up now, really, that mentality, and just take Krishna.
Yeah.
And see that somehow I'm with this man or this woman, and we're servants of Krishna, and endeavor on that path. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. He sees himself as a servant of Krishna, and he sees everyone else as servants of Krishna, and he tries to facilitate others, at least those who are within his jurisdiction, to facilitate them in their service to Krishna and assist them in their service to Krishna.
But what if somebody argues that I want love? A lot of ladies are sentimental, they want to have romance.
Well, that we dealt with at the beginning. Like, that's not love, that's lust. Don't try to bluff. What you want is not love. You want love. If you want love, go there. Develop your relationship with Krishna. And those who have developed their relationship with Krishna, he knows how painful all these affairs are. I mean, what to speak of Krishna conscious devotees, even George Bernard Shaw. In Pygmalion, he is writing, let a woman in your life and you're plunging in an eternal strife. Even he figured out. Anyway, all due respect on the way. We are Krishna conscious. I mean, we are not in the bodily platform. Like, the point is, the moment one tries to enjoy in that way, he is actually opening himself up for an endless strife, eternal struggle. And in the light of scriptures, when you see things, it becomes clear. From Srimad Bhagavatam we get to know what is the actual purpose of sex life, procreation. But because it is an extremely painful affair, therefore certain amount of pleasure has been added to that. But today what is happening, just for the sake of that momentary pleasure, everyone is running after that. That has become the ultimate goal of their existence, the ultimate purpose, the sole purpose of their existence. And the result is, you can see how they are suffering. Therefore, when one takes to spiritual life, automatically he becomes situated in a brahmachari platform. Prabhupada said that in ISKCON, even the householders are brahmachari. Not only the brahmacharis and vanaprasthis and sannyasis are brahmacharis, even the householders are brahmacharis. Because they got the higher taste, they are not running after that lower taste. So, well, since that came up, I'll also briefly elaborate on that point. The dharma of a woman, dharma of a man and how they should actually become situated in that dharma and help each other in that dharma. You see, Brahma, when he came, Brahma actually had the responsibility to procreate progeny. The universe was empty. So in order to fill up the universe, he needed living entities. So that needed procreation. Brahma was able to procreate from his mind. Or you can say procreate from his mind. Just from his mind he could produce children, which means he could give a living entity a body just from his mind. And in this way the first phase of creation took place directly from Brahma, because he was the only one here. Then from Brahma's left hand side of Brahma's body, or first the right hand side, from the right hand side of Brahma's body came Manu, and from the left hand side of his body came Satyarupa. So this Manu and Satyarupa are the first couple, and from them started the procreation through the union of the couple. And that's why Manu is considered to be the father of mankind. We can see from the name also. From the Manu came the word Manava. Manu's offspring are Manavas. And we can see in English also man, mankind. Do we find the link? Yes. Coming from Manu. So, that is how it started, and this objective of copulation is that from the father the spirit soul is transmitted in the womb of the mother, transplanted in the womb of the mother, and in the womb of the mother that spirit soul develops the body. So this is how they have been designed. The man is meant to perform certain function, and a woman was meant to perform certain function, and accordingly they develop their nature. Man is, in that sense, man's nature is like that of an enjoyer, and a woman's nature is like that of an enjoyed. So that is the nature's arrangement. And that is why the Vedic understanding is the man's business is to give protection and the woman's business is to remain submissive to the husband. In the Vedic wedding, a whole lot of conditions are made. One actually, the husband has to take some vows that I am going to take care of this person, this woman, throughout my life. I am going to give her protection in all respects. I am going to provide for her in all respects. These are the conditions, these are the vows that they are taking. And a woman also is taking the vow that I will remain faithful to him all my life. I will bear his offsprings. I will rear them up. I will be completely submissive to him, and so on and so forth. And this is the nature, by nature's arrangement, they are like that. And once somebody challenged Srila Prabhupada, that Prabhupada was making discrimination about women. Prabhupada said, no, I didn't make the discrimination, nature made the discrimination. By nature they are like that, so what can be done? It is nature's arrangement. Like today's conditions are different, like due to mechanical advancement and all that, life has become very artificial. Like in normal condition, in nature, life is not like that. You can't just switch on and immediately light comes in. The heater comes in. You open the tap faucet, the water comes. These are all very, very recent arrangements. Generally, when people lived in nature, to even fetch water was a big thing, big struggle. To collect wood from the forest was a big struggle. And women were not meant for that. Men had to go out and do that. Cultivate the field, man had to do that. Fight with the enemies, man had to do that. And the women, by their nature, they're delicate. They used to stay at home and take care of their household affairs. So today, due to the advancement of the Kali Yuga, situation has become considerably different. And that's why there is this confusion. And what is actually happening? The men are becoming like women and women are becoming like men. Because, it's the thing, like, you see, when you have to rough it out in nature, you have to be rugged. Men are rugged, strong, powerful. But when men sit in the front of the computer and throughout the day just punching the keys, how will he have his vigor and vitality? Anyway, and as a result of that, what is happening? Because men are not really behaving like men, the women are saying, why should I submit myself to you? You're worse than me. You're weaker than me. You're supposed to give me protection, but I have to give you protection. So, as a result of that, huge confusion is prevailing. And but at least we should stick to the Vedic understanding, no matter whatever our surrounding or circumstances is. The intelligent proposal, intelligent way to do things is just stick to the Vedic concept, because that's the perfect concept. That's the perfect society. That's the perfect way to lead your life. And we see where in the families where the women are submissive and men are taking care, those families are happy families. But unfortunately, because there is a lack of spiritual understanding, because there is no understanding about higher authority observing our activities, because the world, society has become atheistic, therefore people have become reckless. They don't have any consideration for morality. They don't have any consideration for piety and sin. Because they don't consider that because of their wrong actions they have to suffer. Because they do not have that understanding, the society has become promiscuous. There is no consideration for morality. Men are running after women. And also women are also following the suit. They are also doing the same thing. But that is not a civilized human society. This is not the civilized human behavior. So at least we, the devotees of ISKCON, those who have a clear understanding of spiritual wisdom, those who have access to the Vedic wisdom, must become situated in that platform and act accordingly. And morality is one of the most important considerations. You lead a life based on morality, you'll feel happiness. You lead a promiscuous life, you are inviting endless suffering for yourself. You are thinking that you are going to enjoy. No. That's not going to lead you to enjoyment. That's going to lead you to endless suffering. And that's what we have to remind everybody. And we shouldn't be hesitant to speak about that in ISKCON. Like I see that there is a lot of sensitivity, no one wants to speak about it. And as a result of that, what's happening? The whole society is going berserk. Any other questions? Yes?
Maharaj, may I make a comment on Guru Gauranga's question? You know, like he said, women want love and romance, and we kind of wrote it off as Maya.
As if men do not.
But you know, like when you said a woman has to be protected in all circumstances, so that's a big part of it, because a woman doesn't give up the attention of many men for the inattention of one. But if she has the attention of one, then she'll be satisfied, and if you don't give it to her, somebody else will. And so that's part of protection. And you know, like King Priyavrata, he didn't want to get married, but who was Ramat convinced him, and he said, but he pretended that he really loved his wife, although at heart he was a renunciate, but he spoke sweet words to her and made her feel loved. So if you're going to get married, that's part of protection, that you make your wife feel like she's loved.
Sure.
And it's very easy just to listen and say sweet, you know, say thank you sometimes and, you know, notice her, because somebody else is going to if you don't.
Yeah, sure.
But don't you think that's kind of a really Maya threat? Oh, well, if you don't take care of me, there's plenty of other guys out there that can look for me. I mean, I think that's kind of a woman's duty, is always to remain chaste, even in a society where, yeah, she could go to Walmart and wear...
Anyway, what she's saying that when a woman is treated with care and attention and love, then she'll not feel the need.
I mean, Marge, like, after, you know, 25 years of marriage, when now we're taking vanaprasth, and your wife is, you know, now getting to 50 or whatever, you know, oh honey, you look so beautiful. I think, you know, that at a certain point, this has to be, you know, the moon has to, I think we have to give that up when we're all Krishna conscious. To, you know, otherwise, I don't know. I mean, I didn't sign up for that. You know, I don't know
but
how it is.
But the point is, if you do that for 20 years of your married life, then for the next 25 years or 10 years, you don't have to worry about it. Yes, David Prabhu?
I think I agree with what Kamalini is saying. And I think that you can't use the exception to the rule. The general rule is, what she's saying is the general rule is correct. That if you want your wife to act feminine, then you have to create the environment by which she can act as a feminine person. And that's the duty of a husband. That's a man's duty.
Good. Yeah.
So you gotta act that way for 25, 30 years of your marriage. It's still the duty of the man to create that environment that she can act, you know, as a female. So I think that's, you know.
Yeah, Lochan Prabhu?
I feel like the marriage has to be very sensitive to both parties. The man has to take care of his wife and be very sensitive to where she's at in terms of what she needs. Of course, she needs Krishna consciousness, but she also has material needs or emotional needs. And he has to be sensitive to that if he's protecting her. If he just assumes that at a certain point in my life there's monocrosties or something, right? You know, I have to maybe be sensitive to what my wife needs at the time. And it seems like he's not protecting her fully. It's kind of an ongoing sensitivity thing.
I would argue that, you know, the beauty of the husband is to liberate and to liberate his children and to liberate his wife. And therefore, at every measure, he should be taking opportunities to enlighten her that I may die at any moment, that this is temporary, and your attachment to me will just end in great suffering unless you can, you know, rise above that. There must be protection in the form of you know, protecting her in every way, but at the same time, if you just, you know, throw ghee on the flames of this passionate love and romance, I think that at the end of the day, that they'll take birth in you. Personally, that's my opinion.
Yes, with Ananda Prabhu.
I think Kamalini is saying, just be kind and be nice. I don't think it's specifically, you're beautiful, you're sort of whatever. I think she's just saying, just be nice.
Well, she used the word
question. Let me finish my point. So, I mean, in other words, we want to be, just like everyone wants to be treated in a decent manner. And if you've gone through 20 years or 25 years of your life, even if you're not thinking, oh, she's, you know, the most beautiful Vapu, because we're actually not interested in the bodily, ultimately in the bodily content. She's my friend. She's my friend who's gone through all this whole life together, and at least you can be kind to your friend. I don't know, when I talk to my friends, I just say, God, I really, you know, I try to be nice to my friends. So I think that men just have to understand that the bottom line, at the end of the day, we're all souls, and just be kind. Just be, you know, speak nicely, that's all.
Well, I agree with that. I'm not against being kind, but I think attention is, you know, our attention should be used in a positive manner to enlighten them about Krishna. If you have the illusion, you know, all the time, even up to the old age, I don't think, you know, and I don't, you know, I don't think that we can accuse somebody, well, you know, you're too fanatic for who or whatever, because, you know, you have this attitude. I don't think that's the correct stance, because when we read in the Bhagavatam every day, it's saying the same thing, that we should be detached from these bodily connections, and that we should be, you know, it doesn't mean you slap your wife every day, or you ignore her, or, but I think that there's a proper one, you know, husband and wife to live in a certain way. Husband lives separate to the wife in the same house. You know, but we see in modern society, and we see the fabric in ISKCON, that, you know, that the pressure of this idea that if, you know, you don't give me attention, there's others, I think that, you know, that's just a kind of a threat in one sense. And I mean, the men, you know, those men who want to be Krishna conscious, they can just walk away. Okay, you know, if that's your attitude, you know, I'll just, you know, continue. So I think that, it, you know, like just as you have to be sensitive to a woman should be sensitive to a man's taking Krishna consciousness. Maybe he took to Krishna consciousness because he wants to give up the existence of this material energy. And therefore, why burden him with all these, you know, romantic ideas? And of course, you know, it's not that you have to be dry and nasty, like Buddha was saying. But I think, you know, the whole idea of relationships, you were saying, is centered around Krishna. And I couldn't walk around pretending for 25 years, oh, you know, this or that, and make some illusory poetry. I just couldn't do it. I may be wrong.
No.
Well, yes, I mean, the example is...
Anyway, let's... I think Jagat Purush Prabhu has something to say.
Well, my understanding of a person's responsibility in the relationship is the responsibility ultimately, in the deepest sense, of every devotee, and that's to make his greatest endeavor to become Krishna conscious. And I believe that becomes the primary focus of any leader in a family situation, according to the Vedic model. Husband is to be the leader. My understanding of that is that husband is to become the example, because real leadership comes from example. It doesn't come from a particular choice of words or a particular development in, you know, a certain kind of communication. It's about consciousness. It's about, you know, establishing an example. And, you know, we have to be very, very, very patient, because we're all very deeply conditioned souls. And a male-female relationship is a very complicated affair, because it involves all the, you know, interactions between both of nature in this relationship. So, I believe my view is that the ultimate responsibility of both husband and wife, but we're talking about the responsibility of husband, is to make the endeavor to become Krishna conscious. And I believe that if the wife is sincere, whatever situation in the mode of nature she may be, if she's sincere and appreciates, genuinely appreciates Krishna consciousness and principles of Krishna consciousness, accepts that Srila Prabhupada is our guiding our father and our guide, then ultimately, and it may take time, but ultimately, if the husband sets that example, she will respect him. And she will want to follow. It's not a matter of force. She will want to follow that leadership because that example is there.
So you mean the onus actually lies on the husband? Yeah. Yeah, sure. Yes.
Wife comes from rich family, and maybe by karma she is more capable of making more money than her husband, but it does not make the husband big or weaker than her, because if the husband is spiritually stronger, as usually in a happy marriage it is the case, then actually even wife is materialistically stronger. I mean, in this other regard, I mean, she is not like superior than husband, because if the husband is less envious and less lusty and less greedy and less mental than a wife, then it can also be a wonderful relationship, even if the wife is capable of making more money, and just husband can fix his mind and energy in making, a wonderful spiritual atmosphere, or maybe, in that regard I was thinking that.
Yes.
It is Kali Yuga, we cannot expect for men to be superior.
So next, let's try to Mother Krishna Priya. And Sita, you want to say something?
Well, Mother Krishna Priya used two key words, appreciation and respect. The women are just wanting some appreciation for their efforts, for the family. I don't think there's a 50-year-old woman or even waiting around for some man to say you're sexy and beautiful and, material qualified. They just want to be appreciated. And in turn, the man just wants respect. And I just think those are two key words that need to have.
Thank you. Mother Krishna,
I also appreciated what Jada Krishna said about examples. I thought that was really important, that it's so important, the example that we set in our life, because the example that we set sets up the response that we'll get from others. And also, at different times, due to circumstances, we might find ourselves in awkward circumstances. And so, not all the women are married as they were in the Vedic times. And yet, at the same time, we understand the principle is there of chastity. So chastity, as I understand it to be, is being chaste to, because we're part of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, being chaste to Srila Prabhupada, being faithful to our vows, being faithful to Krishna, and trying to cultivate those proper qualities of setting the proper example. And by our own behavior, we will get also, because everything is reciprocal, so also as ladies, those of us that are in ladies' bodies, how we relate, how we follow our vows, how we are chaste to Prabhupada, how we are chaste to our spiritual master, we also get a response from others in that relationship.
Good, very good. Yes, Lila Sutta?
I really appreciated when you brought up the point that it's important that we see ourselves as servants of Krishna and that we see everyone else as servants of Krishna. Because personally, my own reflection on your elaboration on that point is that as soon as the consciousness of my spouse or my whatever comes into play, then there's a opportunity for the exploitative mentality to come into play. And it shifts from it being like relatively easy to encourage and support someone that visits a temple or a brahmachari or brahmacharini who's doing their steady service. That can be so much easier than to encourage steadily someone that we relate to as my wife or my husband or my child. It becomes more challenging with that entrance of the exploitative kind of consciousness.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Okay, so yes, Chandrasekhar. Good. Yeah.
Tiny observation.
Yeah.
From someone who has no experience in the matter, but who has traveled extensively around the world. My observation is that it just so happens that America is the country in the world where this particular topic among ISKCON devotees is most discussed. Most heated, and where devotees make the biggest issue of it.
Because America is the most advanced country.
Amongst the greatest.
So, America also happens to be the most influenced by modern trends.
Setting the trend.
Feminism, yeah. Among others. So, we should ask ourselves, how much are we influenced by the host country, by the host culture, and why is it that, is it just a coincidence, or is it a result of conditioning from the host country or culture that we're in, that in this country we happen to be the most vocal about this issue, whereas in other countries around the planet, where, for example, feminism is not as pronounced, people and devotees don't make a big deal out of this issue. Interesting observation.
Yes. Yes. Udayananda Prabhu.
Srila Prabhupada said, I was thinking, if I go to America and I tell them, no intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling, no meat eating, they'll say, go home. So in this society, which is promoting all those things to the nth degree, it is the antithesis of what Krishna consciousness is.
Yeah.
But Prabhupada came to deliver this message of Mahaprabhu, which was just the opposite of what it stands for. So, we're affected by the environment. But we're not embracing this environment. We're getting out of this environment. We're not meant to become Americans. We're meant to become Krishna. We just want to become devotees of Radha and Krishna. So.
Yeah, right. So we are here to practice the Vedic culture and promote Vedic culture in a world which has become very degraded. That is our mission. In one hand, it's the most degraded age, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to distribute the most wonderful spiritual gift. So that is our good fortune. Let's take advantage of this good fortune. Let's not become victims of the influence of this age of Kali. And that is actually the challenge that we have facing. And the observation is, the reality is, that many individuals, even after coming to Krishna consciousness, are becoming victims of the influence of Kali, in spite of receiving the gift of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now the question is, how to save them, how to save them. How to protect them, how to create an atmosphere where Kali's influence will be completely warded off. Jayashree, you want to say something?
This part may be just last bit about Mahaprabhu's mission in this age of Kali Yuga is so important to make it really touch his heart, because we've been giving, and I feel understanding of life and how to live it successfully in this world, but in a completely unideal setting, no matter what country we're in. Because we're all in this age, and we're all, the saying goes, this is the ocean's fault. And so then, all we have is the mercy of the Vaishnavas, really. Is that when they look at us, that they don't just see our fault, and how we're not measuring up to that ideal. And how they see, yes, this is someone who loves Mahaprabhu just for Vaishnava. And just, trying living their life in their own way to be able to serve Mahaprabhu. And our relationship, I hadn't heard it ever spoken that our consciousness is like a ray going out to Krishna, and Krishna is reflecting it back to everyone. So I'm really going to meditate on that, because when we do that, we can, this is maybe something I'm elaborating on more later, how that actually a practical application and not just a theoretical one. Because it's really in that light, in a very real sense, that even when we have our faults, we can say, Krishna, I'm just trying to please you in this way. That Krishna will give that back to the other person. And it's not actually just our own effort, it's not just what we do. But if we're actually giving our hearts to Krishna, and that in relationship to this devotee, or that devotee, that Krishna will just give it back. Then it becomes pleasing to the heart. And then you don't have to figure out in the material sense, well, I need to do it this way, or I need to do it that way, or I need to say this word, or I need to say that word. Because it comes from the heart through the intention.
Thank you. Thank you, Jayashri. So, we'll wrap it up, and I think we had quite a nice session. Did you like it? And now the question is how the points that we discussed and the points that evolved out of this discussion, are we going to implement them? And as I said earlier, like, I'm leaving it up to the senior leading devotees here to take it upon themselves to implement it. Create some opportunities, make some arrangements that these points that came up can be effectively implemented. I mentioned a few names, but I'm sure many other names also. I just mentioned their names. One thought came up. I didn't mention Leela Shukra's name. She can play a very important role in this. She is a very dynamic personality with a lot of leadership qualities. Mother Krishna Priya, agree with that? So let's do that. And Golokananda, Mother Golokananda Priya, and Mahamantra. So where is Mahamantra? So two of them, as the temple presidents, you are the leaders of this temple, and you all figure out what to do. Because unless we make a sincere and concerted effort, the desired result will not be there. Kardamani also. You all are leaders of this jatra. So please take it upon yourself. Jayashri, you also are a very powerful leader of this jatra here. So you all get together and decide, figure out how to uplift the Krishna conscious environment here. Mother Sadhvi also, I forgot to mention your name. Now as I am looking around and all the personalities are just becoming very, very clearly visible. We have to take it upon ourselves. Like we cannot say somebody else will do it. Our attitude should be, what can I do? No matter how insignificant it may be, let me do whatever I can do. There's a very small four-line poetry. They're called two lines are couplets.
Yeah.
Quatrains. Okay. By Tagore. Rabindranath Tagore. So when the sun was setting, the setting sun asked, who is going to take up my responsibility? The whole world was silent. There was a small lamp in the corner of the room. It said, whatever little I can, I will do. So, now that Srila Prabhupada is not with us, the world has become dark. Now to dispel the darkness, we have to simply try to do whatever little we can. We may not become like the sun or the moon, but at least we can become a small lamp and give out whatever little light we can. And that is going to benefit this world in an incredible way. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. All glory is to Srila Prabhupada.